Hi, welcome to James Miller Lifeology, where you learn to simplify and transform your spirit, mind, and body. My name is James Miller. I'm a licensed psychotherapist and a composer. Thank you so much for joining me today in this podcast. Let's get started. Today's episode is brought to you by Audible.com. Get your free audiobook and a free 30-day trial at www.audibletrial.com/James Miller Lifeology. I have a great show for you today. I'll be explaining how your tomorrow can start today. I'll also be interviewing CPA and author Joseph Parenti, who shares his powerful story of how his life drastically changed one fell day and his inspiring road to recovery. You all know me as a psychotherapist, but many of you do not know me as a composer. My latest album, Restoration, was just released. Restoration is a continuation of the first album, Consolation. I like to think of these albums like books. Each original composition is written like a chapter in a book. And like in any story, the character goes from a sense of grief and loss, and at the end of Consolation, finds hope for his future. In Restoration, he has an awakening. And in that awakening, he recognizes all the things in his life which are not healthy, and it helps him come to a place of restoration, becoming greater than he was before. You may purchase this album on iTunes or any other digital music store. The name of the album is Restoration, and my stage name is James S. Miller. The name of the piece you are currently hearing is entitled Restoration. Anthony Burgess was 40 when he learned that he only had 1 year to live. He had a brain tumor that would kill him within a year. He knew he had a battle on his hands. He was completely broke at the time, and he didn't have anything to leave behind for his wife, Lynn, soon to be a widow. Burgess had never been a professional novelist in the past, but he always knew the potential was inside of him to be a writer. So for the sole purpose of leaving royalties behind for his wife, he put a piece of paper into a typewriter and began writing. He had no certainty that he would even be published, but he couldn't think of anything else to do. It was January of 1960, he said, and according to the prognosis, I had a winter and spring and summer to live through and would die with the fall of the leaf. In that time, Burgess wrote energetically, finishing 5.5 novels before the year was through. Verily nearly the entire lifetime output of E.M. Forster and almost twice that of J.D. Salinger. But Burgess did not die. His cancer had gone into remission and then disappeared altogether. In his long and full life as a novelist, he is best known for A Clockwork Orange. He wrote more than 70 books, but without the death sentence from cancer, he may not have written at all. Many of us are like Anthony Burgess, hiding greatness inside, waiting for some external emergency to bring it out. Ask yourself, what would you do if you had Anthony Burgess's original predicament? If I had just 1 year to live, how would I live it differently? What exactly would I do? Your tomorrow starts today. Do you remember a time when you were really excited to start something new? You had all this motivation and this desire to make changes in your life. For some people, it could be starting a diet. For other people, it could be going to the gym. For some people, it could be starting a new job, a new company, or even going back to school. You have this passion and this drive to do something, but for some reason, you don't start it. And then as the days go by, that desire and that passion starts to diminish. It starts to leave. Sometimes we make excuses not to start something because we think we don't have the time or we have all these other obligations. And so that desire and that dream that originally was very powerful all of a sudden starts to be diminished, starts to fade. And when we don't make it a priority, all of a sudden other areas in our life start to take its place. We think, oh, I can't start this new venture because I have this particular thing to do or I have this thing to do. And then we think, oh, I'll do it tomorrow. Or I'll start next week. But the problem is tomorrow or next week never comes because something else will always take its place. And years later, upon reflection, we think, oh, I should have done this, right? What would my life have been like if I had done this before? Of course, we don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. But when we continually put things in the back burner, our future is not going to go in the direction that we originally had intended. And when we're not proactive in our life is going to go in a meaningless direction. Things that really aren't important to us all of a sudden start to become in the forefront of our mind. And after a while, our life seems like it's on autopilot. The things around us just don't bring us joy, don't bring us a happiness that they used to. I would really challenge you today to think about it. What were some of the goals and plans you had in the past that you were really excited about it, but for some reason you didn't do it? Are those still important things to you? Are there still a part of you that wishes that you had done something different? But remember, tomorrow can start today. Those things that were once important to you can still be important to you. You can go back to school. You can start that new business. You can start that new diet. All of those things are simply a choice away. You have the ability to make these decisions. You have the ability to get back on track. It's just simply your choice. I wish nothing but happiness and joy in your life, but when we're not proactive in our life, we may be missing out on something that could completely change our life and revolutionize our life in a way that we never imagined. Remember, you don't know what tomorrow brings. Unfortunately, we've heard of those people who have experienced unexpected traumatic events, and unfortunately, they're never able to fulfill their dreams. Take advantage of today. Don't put it off until tomorrow. You don't know what tomorrow brings, but you do know today you can make the choice which will revolutionize your life. Your tomorrow can start today. And now, a quick word from my sponsor. Audible.com is offering you, my listener, a free audiobook and a free 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/JamesMillerLifeology. Many of you don't know this about me, but I'm an avid reader, so this is a no-brainer for me to go ahead and download any audiobook I'd like to read, specifically if I'm walking my dog, at the gym, or just even driving. So for you to get your free audiobook, go to audibletrial.com/JamesMillerLifeology. They have over 180,000 books for you to choose from, so I'm pretty confident you'll find the one you're looking for. So check it out today. Joe Parenti is a certified public accountant, health coach, and author of Miracle on 91st Street, Surviving the Impossible. His story will encourage others to forge ahead and trust their own instincts when confronted with any challenges in their life, especially the physical. Welcome to my show, Joe.
Oh, thank you so much, James. It's a pleasure to be on your show today. I hope my story can motivate and inspire your listeners.
I'm sure it will. You've had quite a life. You know, when I read your story and your bio, I was blown away with all of the traumatic experiences that you've experienced. But the great thing is you overcame it. And so I can't wait for you to share that with my listeners today.
Yes. So it was, you know, about, I think, 26, 27 years ago. 1988, and I had just driven my car to return a video. That was when you had to actually go to a store and rent a video. And on the way back, I got hit by a car that was stolen and being chased by a cab driver. I don't remember any of it. I didn't see it coming, but at the scene, you know, my as they were pulling me out of the car, my heart stopped, and they gave me CPR there on the floor, and then in the ambulance, my heart stopped again. And then on the way to the hospital, my heart stopped a third time. And again, they revived me. So that was good.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it was tough.
So you were just going about your day, just doing your normal thing, just returning the video. And all of a sudden, you get blindsided by a car. How fast was the car going?
They were thinking about 80 miles an hour.
Oh, my gosh.
Because he was being chased, and it was a side street, so you never expect.
Oh, of course.
So he went right through the stop sign and hit my passenger door so hard that the door ended up on my armrest.
Wow. Oh, my gosh.
And after the hit, he actually pushed me across the street, and my driver's side of the car hit another car. So I was, like, locked in.
And then your heart stopped, you said, two times?
It was actually three in total. Once when they were trying to get me out of the car, once on the way to the hospital, and once when we got to the hospital.
Oh, my gosh. And how old were you at this time?
23.
So I'm assuming you just finished college. You're just starting your life.
Yeah, I just started my new job. I was in great shape physically. I just won the bench press competition at my gym.
Oh, wow.
So I was, it was a big hit for me because I was just on my way up and I got hit.
Literally, yes. So what happened from there? So you're in the hospital, your heart stopped three times. And then what happened after that?
Well, I was in a coma for about 3 or 4 weeks. You know, and during that time, the doctors were, of course, examining me and speaking to my family and telling them, you know, the worst scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
He may come out of the coma since it's a light coma, but he probably won't have full functions. He can never be a CPA. He'll need a lot of assistance. So that was, like I said, for about 3-4 weeks. Then I came out of the coma, but then I was in a bad hospital.
Okay.
I wasn't being properly monitored, and they were feeding me when I wasn't supposed to be eating, so the food went into my lungs.
Oh, my gosh.
I got pneumonia, and I got emphysema, which no one even knows about anymore. It's like a pus in the lungs.
Oh, my gosh.
So I got really sick again, and I lost 50 pounds when I was in the 3 or 4 weeks, I lost 50 pounds because of neglect.
Yeah. Oh, wow. And that's so traumatic because, you know, you're already physically impaired. Then all of a sudden it's compounded by this inability to care for you in a professional, healthy way. Oh, my God. I'm so sorry. Yes. How is your family dealing with this? I mean, once again, they're going through their day themselves. And all of a sudden they get this horrible news. How are they hearing this? Because when you hear the worst case scenario from the doctors, I mean, you can only think worst case scenario.
It was difficult for them. And, you know, they basically, you know, lived at the hospital for 3 or 4 weeks, just hoping for something to get better, hoping for a sign or something. And then when I came out of the coma the first time, I seemed like everything was pretty good. So they were hopeful. I at the time also had the tracheotomy because I wasn't breathing on my own. I had the pneumonia and my head was also tilted severely to the right and twisted and was kind of stuck in that position. But they were hopeful that again, they saw some signs that I was coming out of it. But then once I got the pneumonia, I kind of went almost back into the coma. I was kind of, you know, not
as fucked. Oh, my gosh. So you were starting to get better for the most part, starting to, and then all of a sudden the pneumonia just brought you back.
Yes. And they said at that time I was responding to them, and I have no memory of that at all. Because once I went back, I went, you know. And then after probably 5 weeks in that one hospital, they transferred me to another hospital. And then after about a week there, I started to have some memory of just waking up one day in a hospital bed and being like, what am I doing here? What happened? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the reality started to set in. You were being more coherent in your surroundings. Tell me about your neck. So you said that was tilted? What is that? What do you mean by that?
Like a severe case of whiplash, but it was actually stuck in one position to one side. And I couldn't move it. I had to move my whole body to turn, you know, left or right.
Oh, wow. So it was almost fused in a way, as far as the muscles and all that was stuck in that position.
Yeah, well, it wasn't fused at that point. It was actually just I think the joints were out of alignment. But it's eventually gotten better. I've done a lot of work on that. Mm-hmm. But at the time, it was really bad.
Well, how did you start to recover?
Slowly.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Well, the first thing was that, you know, I was in bed for so long that they first started, let's see if he can sit up in bed. Mm-hmm. And I did that, and I would get dizzy because I couldn't get my bearings because I was flat for so long.
Yeah.
So when I started the physical therapy, it was in bed, sitting up for 5 minutes until I couldn't take it, and then laying back down. And we did that, you know, for, I don't know, a week or a few weeks, sitting up. Then I started, you know, can you stand, can you get out of bed? And I had a lot of help, and it's just standing and sitting, that type of thing. But then since I was so sick and I wasn't getting better, they realized I had to go back in because I still had the fevers. I had the infection in my lungs. So they actually did another operation, and they operated and took out half a rib and tried to get out the infection that was stuck in my lungs, the pus.
Oh, wow.
And then again, I was getting better, and then that sent me back for like a week or 2 weeks. I was on heavy painkillers. I couldn't move. I couldn't do any kind of physical therapy, and that upset me because I was just starting to make some headway with that. But
well, you're starting to have a little bit of hope too.
Yes.
And then it was almost like that was snatched away from you.
Yes. But the good news was they were right. The infection was holding me back. So once I got rid of it and once I recovered from the operation, I started moving forward pretty quickly, like, you know, standing up, sitting in a chair, taking some steps, you know. So it started moving along pretty well from there.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about your emotions. I mean, I can't even imagine what that's like. You know, once you started to be more coherent of where you were and how traumatic the situation was, what were you experiencing emotionally?
Good question. I was a whole bunch. I was of course very upset. I was very worried. I was depressed. You know, I'd get emotional a lot of times. But then other times, I guess I felt very loved and supported. My family and friends were just there constantly. And it was so nice to have them there, so it made it a little bit easier.
Yes. Well, because I'm sure you realize you already knew before, but how much people love you and how much they care about you and how worried and concerned they were for you.
Yeah, and at one point I went into a pretty deep depression, and I started asking the question, why me? Mm-hmm. Why this happened to me? What if I wasn't there? What did I do wrong? And once I got on there, it was probably like, I don't know, a day or two of just asking myself, and then I had an epiphany, and I realized I'm never going to get an answer to this question.
Yeah.
I'm never going to get out of here if I keep asking myself that question and making myself more depressed. So it just occurred to me, like, well, what do I got to do to get out of here? That's the question I should be asking. What kind of therapy? How do I have to push myself? So that was kind of the turning point for me, right? I hit the low point of, you know, why me? And then I realized I was stuck there, and I pushed myself out of it, and that was the turning point when I started saying, let me work harder in therapy. Let me, you know, ask to therapist if I could do this. Oh, also, with the chick out of me, I couldn't even speak, so I was writing everything down. I had to write notes to everybody. I couldn't speak. Yeah.
Well, I think it goes back to that whole aspect of when we focus on why me, there's no movement with that. When we focus on the past, why, then there's no direction for the future because we're only focusing on the past. Exactly. When we reframe it to say, I don't know why, but it is. And so since it is, since it did happen, what do I do? How can I move myself out of this? And so it sounds like you were able to do that. You were able to find your bearings. What do you think happened within you for, you said like a day, day and a half for you to kind of navigate through that? How did you have that epiphany?
Well, I think it's like, you know, you have to hit rock bottom before you realize I can't stay here and just cry every day. I have to get out of here. So what do I need to do that? And, you know, asking why me is not getting me there. Mm-hmm. So I was, you know, very focus oriented. I was just like, I have to get out of here. And what's the best way to do it?
Yeah. You know, I think that really shows your resilience and the strength of character that you have, because many people struggle with that. And there's nothing wrong with it, but some people get stuck in that. Why me? Why is this happening? And when the longer someone's in that, the harder it is to pull themselves out of it. So I really want to validate and really acknowledge the fact that how strong your personality is and how resilient you are. And that's such a testament to your character.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Of course. So your vocal cords and your epiglottis, I read that they were paralyzed.
Yes. Yes.
And so what was the treatment for that?
I had a traumatic brain injury. So I had a head injury. So my frontal lobe was swollen. Mm-hmm. And if you remember learning back in school, you know, if one area of your brain gets affected, that one side of your body gets affected. Mm-hmm. So I was, you know, I had semi-paralysis on my whole left side. I couldn't move my hands. I couldn't move my legs on the left side. And the vocal cords, they didn't really know why, but they just were closed and they were like paralyzed closed. Which leaves the tracheotomy so I could breathe.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yes.
Are you left or right-handed?
Kind of both.
Oh, so yes, you know, you have to, you maybe had to relearn, sure.
You know, and it was also interesting was when they gave me the tracheotomy, it was because I wasn't breathing on my own, but they didn't know that my vocal cords were closed and stuck closed. So when they tried to take it out, they realized I was struggling and they took the, whatever kind of test they did, like some kind of a scope or sonogram. Mm-hmm. And they saw that they were closed. And I remember being in the room and the doctor told my sister, if his vocal cords haven't started working by now, you know, 7 weeks after the accident, they probably never will.
Ugh. So here you are trying to find some hope, and then you're hearing things that are perhaps removing that hope from you.
Yes, of course. But, you know, I was in such a daze with, you know, with the medication, and my sister said, oh, just ignore him. And I said, okay, and I ignored him. So I didn't ingest what he said, which
was very... That is wonderful.
Yes.
Did you have some people when they go through these experiences, they have maybe a more of a spiritual awakening or rely more on their faith? Did you have anything like that for yourself? Doesn't mean they have to, but some people do.
No, I did so more after the accident, because during it, you know, then during it, I found out about all the prayers that were said for me. People, you know, like set up a prayer, like a special prayer for the churches for me. Mm-hmm. Afterwards, I did become closer to God, yes.
Wow. And I think at any time we go through something traumatic, when we do have that spiritual connection and awakening, it can kind of bolster our own understanding of who we are, what our purpose is, how, you know, of course, we would never want to go through these situations again, but how can that be used to help the people? You know, for example, you're on my show today, sharing your story, and in the retelling of that story, I'm sure it's going to help many people as well. So that's all kind of connected in that spiritual awakening.
Yes, absolutely, yes.
What do you think is one of the big things for you that maybe one of the biggest lessons you learned through this whole situation?
You know, you're saying the biggest, but there are definitely a few. And mm-hmm. I guess the biggest is we go through tough times in life, but be grateful for what you have, because you never know how fast you could lose it. You know, life can change in an instant, which is exactly what happened to me.
Yeah.
I also believe in, you know, and again, like you said, my resilience. The power of perseverance when you're faced with a situation that seems impossible, you know, for some, and I don't know what it was in my upbringing, but giving up just wasn't an option for me. I just didn't want to give up. I just fought and I kept fighting and I got beat down a few times and I got upset and I gave up a few times temporarily, but I just kept coming back because that was part of my personality to just persevere.
Yeah. Well, that's powerful. Are there any things you typically do on a daily basis to just show yourself your gratitude or show your family gratitude or whatever that might be?
I try to make the most of my life and live the best that I can. And, you know, we always have choices. So I choose to be happy every day, mm-hmm. and to love the people around me and just try to, you know, enjoy life because it's so precious.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. You were going to be a CPA. It sounds like you were able to fulfill that dream.
Yes, and again, something the doctors told my parents was he'll never do accounting, he can never do math, he can't do problem solving, you know, back when they first diagnosed me. But when I came out, it took a while to, before I started working, I started work, you know, part-time 3 days a week and built myself up. And then I worked in some firms for a few years, and then I eventually went on my own, you know, and have my own practice now.
That's amazing, Joe. That really is. That really is. I mean, I think that's such a powerful, powerful story, a testimony for yourself that especially when you're told that you'll never be able to do something, and here you are years later, and you're very successful, and you're very good at it, and you defied the odds. You defied what the experts say.
Yes, and at some point it became like an ego thing. Like, I'm going to prove them wrong. I want to prove them wrong. I'm going to do this. I'm going to walk, I'm going to talk, I'm going to, you know, do the accounting. So it became a challenge for me to just prove them wrong because yeah. I saw some mistakes they made when I was in the hospital, and I'm like, well, not everything they say is going to come true, so let me see what I can do to prove them wrong.
Exactly. And I think that's one of the things, perhaps maybe you have a stubborn personality. I don't know for certain, but I know for me, when people tell me, well, James, you can't do something, and in my mind, I'm thinking, oh, you don't know. You don't know me. I will prove to you that I can do it. And they may never even know in the future whether I've done it or not. But for me, I used that the words that they said, and I remember that. And that's what gives me the fuel to overcome something that I was told I would never be able to do.
Good. That's great to hear also.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk more about how you are today. So after all those years, so how many years after, it's been about 26 years later?
Yes, yes.
How is your health overall now?
My health is very good. The thing, when I got out of the hospital, my biggest thing was really, my walking wasn't great, but my neck was really severely, like I said, tilted and stuck. Mm-hmm. And it affected everything I did. I mean, I couldn't turn, I couldn't really walk well. So, and again, you know, in physical therapy, they told me not to see a chiropractor because they're going to hurt me. So they put it like a little scare in me. So it took me a while before I actually did that. But once I did that, that helped me tremendously. And mm-hmm. it's been 26 years, and I go to different types of chiropractors. I do different types of massage therapy. I've done acupuncture. So it's a constant struggle for me to keep my neck in working order because sometimes it still kind of locks up on me and hurts.
Mm.
And I started the hot yoga a few years ago.
Yes, yeah. I do hot yoga. Yeah, it's great.
Oh, dude, it's awesome. That's done wonders for me also. And so like I said, it's kind of – I spent a lot of time treating it and so I could live my life and not be limited by it.
And, you know, I think that's one of the things when – it kind of goes back to that whole aspect of why me versus this is what it is. I'm going to find my answers. And that's the same type of thing when it comes to treatments. You find the treatment that works for you.
Yeah, exactly.
There's many, many professionals, many licensed professionals, many certified professionals, and you'll find the treatment that works specifically for you. And like you said, you may have multiple versions of what that therapy looks like, but you figured out for yourself, because it's your body, and you figured out what works and what doesn't work.
Exactly, yes.
And sometimes, you know, we could graduate from something that worked, and then it doesn't work anymore, and so we find something else.
Right, exactly. And that's a key thing, too. I think that's been one of the keys to my recovery is that I've been open to, and I kind of learned my lesson with the chiropractor when they first told me not to go, and I refused to go, and my sister was pushing me because she's a chiropractor. So when I eventually opened my eyes to that, I was like, oh, anything's, you know. So that kind of gave me an insight into not being limited to what you mm-hmm. think. There's always another way to do something.
Yeah.
So that's been a big help.
Yeah, that definitely is. And I think that's the thing. I mean, some people, if they have an aversion or not, whether it's personal or professional, but the point is you get to figure out for you what's healthy for you.
Exactly.
Yeah. How has your book, how has it helped other people?
I'm getting some great feedback. And again, you know, people are just reading it and seeing how bad I was and how I recovered. And it's giving them hope in their lives. And that's a lot of the reviews that I got and comments is it's just helping them also appreciate what they have because they realize how fast it could change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly can. I saw some of the pictures that you had sent me, and the car was totally mangled.
Demolished, yes.
Wow, it was, yeah. How about when you drive now, does it ever Do you ever get concerned about that years later?
No, I think that my blessing was that, again, I don't remember the accident. I didn't see it coming.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't have the nervousness to get behind the wheel, which is a blessing.
Yeah, that definitely is. Because for some people, they can have that post-traumatic stress when yes. it comes to a situation like that. Yeah, of course. One of the things I saw that you had said is that you're committed to living a healthier life and being yes. passionate about with, you know, motivating others. How do you continually do that, instill that hope in other people?
People seem to just get that from speaking to me about, you know, their issues or my issues and how I'm always like looking for new answers and trying to just find better ways to improve their life. So, you know, in conversations, I just try to find out what people are having trouble with and, you know, give them additional answers, because I know sometimes if you go to one professional, they give you one answer and people get stuck in that. They think that's the only way. And if it's not working, they think nothing else will work. So I try to, again, push them to try other avenues.
Yeah. And help them to self-advocate as well.
Yes.
When it says that you said that you're a health coach. Can you help me understand a little more what that is?
Sure. I graduated from the Institute for Integrative Nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
And I became a health coach, and I try to, you know, like I said, help clients with suffering from health issues using holistic remedies. And I just kind of suggest things to try to help them along, because I'm very into that, researching all kinds of therapies for different ailments.
Yeah, definitely. And once again, I think because you've gone through something very traumatic yourself, that you have a voice and people can realize that you've overcome many things. Because I think sometimes if it's not obvious or apparent to other people that may have gone through something, but clients don't necessarily know that or see that. And
right,
so I think
right.
for you, because your story is so profound, and I think that you have more clout, if you will, because you've gone through so much, and people are drawn to that because they see an answer. They see how dire it was in your life and now how much you're thriving.
And they see the possibilities, which mm-hmm. is good.
Yeah, yes, definitely. With your book, how was it for you to write your book and to recount all the different things that happened?
It was an emotional journey for me. It was, I'd taken a lot of notes back when I first was discharged from the hospital. Someone had said to me, that's a great story, that would make a great book. So I just started writing notes of everything I remembered as far back as I remembered. And I thought one day I'm going to write a book, and it sat around for 25 years. And I came upon it one day. I said, "Oh, let me look into this." So I started putting it together and rereading it and adding to it, and I started reliving some of the horrors from the hospital.
Mm.
It was emotional. There's one chapter when I first see myself in the mirror that I still get upset if I read.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, I was in the hospital, and they put me in front of a mirror. Thought like that would help me somehow, because my body was so twisted, but. It was, after all I'd been through, it was just a shock to see how bad I actually looked.
Yeah. Well, because the last time you probably saw yourself, you would, like you said, you were in really good fitness, or you're really yes. good shape. I mean, you just yes. won that award at the bench press record there. And so you're yes. living in the prime of your life, and all of a sudden you're twisted, literally, in bed, and all the bruises and all those things that have happened for you. I really can't imagine. I can understand a little bit how traumatic that must be for you.
Yeah, and I guess what also got me was, you know, people come to see you and they tell you you look good, because I looked a little better because I gained weight. So they everyone tell me I look good. So when I see the mirror, I'm like, what are they talking about?
Yeah.
They think this is good.
Yeah, of course. I guess that'd be a little subjective, especially since I saw you when you were in a coma. And
right,
see
right.
a little bit. So their baseline was perhaps a little bit different than yours.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Is the book written in a story format, or is it more factual?
It's like first-person story, like mm-hmm. a memoir. It's a memoir, so it kind of takes you through a little bit of my childhood, the accident, and the, you know, 7 months in three different hospitals.
Oh, wow. And in the back end of that, does that explain, does it also share your part of your life, who you are today?
Yes, in the summary, I do that.
That's amazing.
In the conclusion, yes.
That's wonderful. I'm looking forward to reading some of those reviews myself and hearing how amazing this story is.
Great. Thank you much.
Well, if my listeners would like to find out more information about you and about your book, where would they find your information online?
I have the website, miracleon91st.com.
Excellent. They can find the book there and they can read more information about you?
Exactly. And the book is also available on Amazon.
Excellent. Well, Joe, I want to thank you so much for being a guest on my show today, for opening up your heart, sharing your story. I'm sure it's sometimes really dramatic to hear at times, but once again, I really want to just validate how resilient you are and what a great inspiration you are to many people.
Thank you, James. I do appreciate that. And thank you again for having me on your show. It was my pleasure.
I also want to thank you, the listener, for joining with me today. Please subscribe to this podcast through whichever podcast portal you joined with me. If you're using iTunes and you like what you hear, please rate this podcast as well as leave your comments on the iTunes podcast page. Also, please visit my website where you may see all my YouTube episodes and published articles I've written for you. You may also enroll in the Lifeology Academy I created where you can take self-directed courses which are designed for successful people just like you. You may find all this information at jamesmillerlifeology.com. Once again, thank you so much for listening to this podcast episode today. Have a fantastic week, and I look forward to talking to you very soon.